Superhuman eyes. Accelerated evolution.
Welcome to Superhuman Eyes. Today, we are venturing into the confluence of neuroscience, psychiatry, and technological innovation with Dr. David Rabin, a board-certified psychiatrist, neuroscientist, and a leading figure in the realm of mental health. Dr. Rabin's groundbreaking work, from the therapeutic use of ketamine to exploring MDMA's potential in treating mental illnesses, underscores his commitment to reimagining mental health care. Dr. Rabin co-founded Apollo Neuroscience, introducing a wearable device that mirrors the therapeutic effects of MDMA, offering a novel pathway to mental and emotional well-being without pharmacological intervention. His work redefines our understanding of stress and trauma, promising profound new ways for healing. As we dissect the science between MDMA's capacity to foster the sense of safety necessary for healing, and as we explore how Apollo Neuro replicates this, this episode is an invitation to redefine what's possible in our quest for mental health, guided by one of the field's most dynamic figures. Dr. Dave, welcome to the Superhumanized podcast. I have really been looking forward to this conversation with you. Thank you for making time.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me, Ariana.
Oh, absolutely. I follow the development of wearable technology closely, especially the types of devices that promise to alleviate stress, enhance mental well-being, and I am not only intrigued, but I'm not getting paid for this. I'm a huge fan of your device here, the Apollo Neuro. I'm wearing it. And could you share? I have it on the focus setting right now, right? That's perfect for 2 p.m. and also for the purpose of having this conversation with you. Can you share the inspiration behind the creation and also the journey from concept to reality?
Sure. That's a big question, but happy to take it. So I'm also wearing it on my chest. Apollo is a new kind of wearable technology that we developed out of my research at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center to actually deliver a safe therapy to the body. It is designed by neuroscientists and physicians to send soothing sound waves to the body that induce states like meditation on the go. And this is interesting because if you look back in history, thousands of years to ancient meditation and breathwork practices and healing practices, and then also into modern times in biofeedback and more neurofeedback and modern neurotechnology, what we found is that accessing these states that are individual to all of us, that we all have access to, which we can access by deep breathing, soothing deep breathing, just directing your attention to your breath and taking a nice big inhale and a nice big exhale, and then repeating that a few times, is one of the most powerful ways to reliably center our mind back into our bodies. And we see that because people report that from biofeedback studies and meditation studies and mindfulness studies, but also when we measure people who do these activities, that heart rate variability, the leading metric of performance and resilience, goes up. And now the leading metric of longevity and health span goes up when we do these activities. When we do good, healthy amounts of exercise, when we meditate, when we do yoga, when you experience soothing touch from a loved one, a vagal tone, recovery, nervous system activity goes up. And that's the same thing that happens when you meditate. So we were trying to make meditation easier, more accessible to everyone, particularly people who are struggling with mental illness, where meditation, learning meditation and breathwork is very hard. And we know that, especially if you didn't learn it as a kid. And so Apollo is the first technology that we developed from working with people originally with severe mental illness to try to make that easier for them. And what we figured out along the way was that from studying it in the technology in healthy people and also studying it in ourselves over the course of many thousands of subjects over the course of 4 years from 2016 to 2020, that we figured out that this was actually really helpful for us in our sleep, our energy, our focus, and our ability to be our best selves throughout the day. And we didn't have a diagnosis. And so we released it as a consumer product in 2020, January. And it's been extremely effective for improving stress and improving sleep and just helping people feel more rested and more like yourself throughout the day, as if you had spent your life practicing a breathing technique.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I myself really love it. And I've tried a lot of devices, some of which are not so great, a few of which are really fantastic, like your device, Dr. Dave. So you mentioned, of course, human touch and, of course, breathing. What can we get real geeky now here for a moment? What scientific principles do you leverage to improve stress resilience and mental health, just general well-being?
Yeah, so what the scientific literature has shown to date from the latest neuroscience and mental health research and also physical health research is that when we experience stress, or especially chronic daily stress all the time, that's unrelenting, most of our symptoms of whatever illness we have, whether it's physical or mental or emotional, get worse. And the reason for that is a number of reasons, but the main reason is because the stress response system, which controls our fight or flight activity, so getting out of a state of immediate danger to safety, and then our recovery system, which is called the parasympathetic system, which is governed by the vagus nerve, is responsible for taking our resources like blood and then sending it to all of our recovery organs, like our reproductive system and our digestive system and our immune system and our sleep and recovery system and our empathy system and our brains. And those are all systems we don't want to be active or getting resources while we're running from a lion in the jungle, right? So, So simply put, this system is running in the background all the time and it's responsive to stress. And so if we don't train that system to manage stress more effectively by boosting vagal tone, by effectively reminding ourselves that we're safe and we're not actually running from a lion when we're responding to emails or giving a talk or stuck in traffic or watching the news or any of those things, our bodies get tricked into thinking that we're under threat. And then all of our resources go to the fight or flight system. So the skeletal muscles, the heart, the lungs, the motor cortex of the brain, the fear center of the brain, and it takes resources away from our recovery system. And there's only so many resources to go around. There's only so much blood in our bodies, right? And that blood can only be distributed so many places. So if it's going to all of our skeletal muscles, which exist throughout our entire body, and our heart and lungs to get us out of a threatening situation, it's not going to empathy or reproduction or digestion or immunity or sleep. So it's really, simply put, it's really a resource allocation problem where we just need to train ourselves to get our energy and our blood to go where we want it to go, depending on whatever it is we're dealing with at that time. And meditation, yoga, breath work, soothing touch are all tools, even soothing music, like hearing your favorite song on a bad day instantly makes you feel better. Why? Because it reminds us that we're safe. And when we're reminded we're safe through the familiarity of hearing a song we like, all of a sudden our bodies and our brains come back into harmony. And we realize that we're not running from a lion because we can enjoy this song, right? Mm-hmm. And so that restores balance to the nervous system. And soothing touch is one of the fastest natural ways that we can activate that system. And it's evolved over hundreds of millions of years. Since the oldest mammals first started nursing their young after birth, that mother-baby interaction is the most fundamental safety experience that we all experience as newborns. And so that is how we evolve to communicate safety to each other instantaneously without words. And so now we have technology that can help support our touch system in the same way by reminding us we're safe on the go, which helps us to recover from illness and also resist illness more effectively and adapt to stress.
Mm-hmm. And that makes so much sense, Dr. Dave, and especially with regard to PTSD, which you also have vast knowledge about. When you're in a constant state of fight or flight and all your resources are not distributed to actually healing, functioning, but it's you're in this constant state of let's run from the lion, so to speak, it affects everything else. It affects your mental health. It affects your immunity. It affects your hormonal balance. And so a key to healing, really, because a lot of things that may result from, especially if you have very strong PTSD, a lot of the things that result out of it are actually symptoms that have been exacerbated by your body not being in a calm state where healing can take place, if I understand correctly, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the best way to think about PTSD is that it's a trained fear response. So the body learns to be in a threatened state because we found ourselves in an unsafe situation in the past. Now we don't necessarily know that we're safe moving forward into the future. And so that anything that reminds us of that situation that was threatening to us or unsafe to us in the past then makes us feel like we're unsafe right now and unsafe moving forward into the future, or like a victim of circumstance. And so that creates what we call the victim mindset, which is what happens in PTSD, which is I can't trust myself to keep myself safe because the world just throws shit at me and I can't do anything about it. I am at its whim, right? I have no control. I have no say, which is not true. And I think, and it's that lack of trust in ourselves that is fractured by trauma, that, or even not necessarily the trauma itself, but what happens after, right? If we've had something bad happen to us and we go tell somebody, hey, this bad thing happened to me and I'm feeling really hurt right now. And that person who we go to that we trust says, what did you do to get yourself in that situation? What did you do to deserve that? That actually makes the trauma concrete. Like it's like quick dry cement to the trauma. And that reinforces the victim mindset of it's your fault that these bad things happen to you, but it's not your fault. And then the whole therapy process we do, whether we're using just talk therapy or psychedelics or what have you, is about helping restore the trust that we have with each other so that we remember it's not our fault. Bad things just happen sometimes, unpleasant things just happen sometimes. And the sooner that we look back at that perspective, from that perspective of it not being our fault, then we can actually start to repair the issue. But what's interesting about this is it's not just PTSD that is having this, people with PTSD that have this issue. It's probably almost every single known mental illness that we know about to date is likely due to unresolved past traumatic events. And that's a huge discovery. And we're starting to see this become more widely understood. Is that PTSD is just one example of what happens to people after they've experienced trauma, but it can also look like depression, or it can also look like anxiety, or it can also look like ADHD or schizophrenia or bipolar disorder or any number of other mental health conditions. So getting to the root of trauma is actually in large part probably the major way that we're changing how we treat mental illness in the 21st century.
Yes, and that's a huge advancement. I personally have spoken about it a few times on the podcast too. I am intimately acquainted with anxiety and also depression. I'm in a really good place and have been so in a while. And it took a lot of learning, self-growth, different treatment modalities. And there are absolutely ways to heal, to feel good. I have one more question with regard to PTSD and understanding, as you just said, that any type of mental disorders, issues that we're dealing with, they have their roots in some kind of trauma early on in most cases. Would you, dealing with PTSD and CPTSD, so-called complex PTSD, are there different approaches? Say somebody has had over and over again and for a very long time experienced a lot of traumatic events during very early childhood and then even into early adulthood.
Yeah, there are different approaches. I think the general approach is the same, which is let's help you get to the root cause, right? Let's figure out what were these events, what happened, as much as you can remember about them in a safe environment. So we're creating a safe space first and foremost, whether it's just us sitting there talking or whether it's us sitting there talking with Apollo or with psychedelic assisted therapy, helping to expand the safety piece, the safety that we build as a relationship, as doctor patient or patient therapist or whatever it is, that safety is the key to helping people go back and remake meaning around past traumatic events, meaning that rather than seeing past traumatic events as meaning there's something wrong with me that this happened to me, it's the remaking meaning is there's nothing wrong with me that this happened to me. Hard things just happen, bad things just happen, and it's not personal. And so that's a big part of the core of the healing experience. And it's all about safety. and creating the safe relationship, rebuilding trust in the relationship. So if you forgot how to trust yourself because you had all these hard things happen to you, but you learn what it feels like to trust me or your therapist, then you can remember through that through our relationship what it feels like to trust again. And then if you can remember what it feels like to trust again, even if you're trusting another person, then you can remember how to trust yourself again. And it's that role modeling of trust that we provide to our patients that is so critical that I think we don't talk about enough, but it's the foundation of all healing from mental illness and most physical illness. That's the foundation of that safety. And so that's really where we start. And then from there, it's just gently at the comfort of the patient is working with an individual at their speed, meeting them where they are to help them feel comfortable enough to start to unpack some of the things that have happened to them. And without necessarily having to talk about every single piece, but understanding what they think it meant to them and how it shaped the way they see themselves and how it shaped the way they see the world. And then as we start to unpack that, we start to get to the heart of what is actually the problem, which is something bad happened to me and I think it's my fault. And that means there must be something wrong with me that this happened to me. Let's hit that hard, right? Let's dispel that because that is a misunderstanding. And if we can create the safe enough environment for you to reinterpret that, then we can kickstart the healing process.
Yes. Oh, gosh. And I've experienced it in my field of work. Bad things can happen to very good people. And oftentimes, these very good people, the question that they have, all these things happen to me. Am I a horrible person? Every time, it breaks my heart hearing that. I understand where it comes from, yet I'm always so happy when I see individuals move through that. That's the most beautiful thing. With regard to Apollo Neuro and integrating it into, let's say, classic talk therapy, for example, what are some of the most surprising or impactful feedbacks you have received from individuals who have either used it or therapists who have integrated it?
Yeah, absolutely. We have so many wonderful accounts from people who have used it. We have thousands of patients who have been treated with Apollo plus their standard of care in the office. And then we have people using it in the real world themselves, tens of thousands or maybe even hundreds of thousands of people now using it. And it's been really exciting to see the results. I think the main understanding of Apollo and how it works is that and anybody who's listening, by the way, who has an iPhone, if you're curious, well, what is this Apollo thing and what does it feel like? If you have an iPhone, you can go to your app store right now and you can download the Apollo Neuro app and you can feel a sample of Apollo vibrations on your iPhone. And you'll notice how different the vibration of Apollo feels compared to what vibrations normally come out of your iPhone, which are very soothing, slow wave-like vibrations. And these very soothing, slow waves are a wearable form of safety that we can take with us. So that is how Apollo works. And so when you think about having a bad day and getting a hug from someone and instantly feeling better, or having somebody you like hold your hand when you're having a bad day and you almost instantly feel better, it's that kind of response that happens in our bodies when you feel Apollo. And that's what it was designed to do. And that's exactly what it's doing for the body. So in therapy, it's really interesting. We use it in Apollo is the first wearable to be used in psychedelic assisted therapy to help people feel safe and comfortable dropping into that experience, which can be foreign and strange for people, and sometimes scary. And then but therapy can be scary anyway, right? Because therapy is meeting somebody in the face to face and talking about your deepest, darkest secrets and your vulnerability. But vulnerability, the parts of ourselves we see as weak or we see as unacceptable to society or uncomfortable and pleasant, it's talking about those parts and bringing up those parts to the surface that is actually the healing process. Mm-hmm. That's healing. It is addressing vulnerability. If we ignore vulnerability and we just shut it down, suppress it every time it's coming up for attention, those vulnerable parts of us are still hurting and they still need attention. And so therapy, and why a lot of people don't like to participate in therapy, is because you have to be vulnerable. And vulnerability can be scary. It's the same with psychedelic therapy, maybe to an extreme. And so with Apollo, we've seen tremendous results in kids in particular using it in therapy, which is so exciting. With adults, most of the adults use it sometimes in therapy, but also they'll take it home afterwards and they'll use it at home. But in general, it just helps adults and children feel more comfortable being vulnerable in therapy because they feel safe. And with kids, some of the responses with children have just been incredible because kids don't like to talk in therapy. That's just known, right? Anybody who's ever done therapy, talk therapy with a child knows that they most of the time just sit there and play with stuff, or they look at the ground or look at the sky and they're like not engaging with you because they want to avoid talking about hard stuff. And Apollo has had this tremendous benefit for children in therapy because when you put it on them, it calms them so much that they start having conversation. And that's where you really start to see a shift, because once they start talking about what they're feeling and what's going on in their heads, you start to actually be able to help them, not just talk about stuff that you're trying to pass the time with, but you can actually help them get to the root cause of what's challenging them and help them recover. And so those have been the most exciting stories, is just hearing that these children who my colleagues work with, who are expert therapists and child therapists and doctors, they can't get these kids to talk at all for years. They won't talk in therapy, and they'll throw Apollo on them, and the first day they will actually have a face-to-face conversation and they'll actually start to make progress. And it's incredible to see how such a gentle stimulation to the safety response system, like sound waves through Apollo, can actually help kids feel safe enough, and adults, but in kids, it's a very dramatic result, feel safe enough to engage with their therapists and also with their families. And it's really rewarding and exciting.
That is so beautiful, Dr. Dave. And I, via my personal experience now with the Apollo Neuro, I mentioned it before we pressed a record. One of my husbands and my businesses, we're in the health and wellness space in a lot of different areas. One of the businesses is a ketamine IV clinic here in Santa Monica on Montana Avenue, Gateway Clinics. And a lot of the patients that come in for the first time, or even patients who have been quite a few times, and they're going through very hard things. We have had war veterans dealing with even so-called treatment-resistant PTSD, so-called treatment-resistant depression, anxiety, trauma, stress. And I think I'm very interested in talking about, maybe offline, about integrating your technology into our practice. And that being said, you have an incredible background, not only of a knowledge, but actually practice in ketamine therapy, and of, as I've also witnessed, the immense transformative power of ketamine-assisted therapy in mental health care. And from your perspective, I'd love to know, Dr. Dave, what are the most promising developments in ketamine therapy today?
So I think it's very interesting. I'm one of the few psychiatrists who's trained in both ketamine and MDMA-assisted therapy, and I also train others to do this work. And it's a very powerful technique. It's somewhere between ketamine is a very short acting molecule, so it lasts for about 60 to 90 minutes. And then in our clinic, we do talk therapy before and talk therapy after. The experience with the medicine is very internal and meditative. So usually you have an eye mask, the patient has an eye mask on, they're listening to music that guides them to the experience. They have their Apollo and we teach them breath work. And then those tools plus the ketamine results in usually a very powerful experience of what we call quiet mind. So most of us don't remember, I'm sure most of us listening to this probably don't remember the last time our minds were completely quiet. It's pretty rare these days. And that is the ability to access quiet mind is what the result of training in meditation gets you. And it's something that can require, if you're just doing it by practicing meditation or breath work, it can take tens of thousands of hours to get to quiet mind, especially when you're stressed out. And it's really hard for people to learn. And Apollo is interesting in this regard because it helps people to feel safe enough before they even get into the medicine experience to be calm in their bodies, to slow your mind a little bit, and to show you that you're safe. And when you're safe going in, then you're ready for whatever the medicine has to show you, and you have a much more open mind to the experience. You're not white knuckling it. You're not thinking about everything you should have done better before the experience. You're not analyzing it as it's happening or judging it while it's happening. You're just in it, experiencing it and letting it unfold. And it's that experience of allowing the healing process to happen that our natural healing process to happen, that ketamine can amplify dramatically. And then the therapy that we do afterwards, which is called integration therapy, is where we unpack everything that you've learned from your ketamine experience or everything you've experienced in that ketamine session. And we unpack that and help you figure out how does all this new stuff that you just learned fit into your day-to-day life and practice. And it's really, we published a paper on this in 2023 with some of my colleagues from the Board of Medicine and from our clinic and with Dr. Allison Fiducia, who's a very well-regarded MDMA researcher and the founder of Psychedelic.Support, that came out in Journal of Affective Disorders in 2023, talking about the best practice gold standards for how to deliver psychedelic therapy to people safely, and ketamine being the only legal psychedelic we have available today. And it looks like, from what we can tell, that the best experiences people get are having some preparation therapy in advance. Then you have your medicine session, and then you have the integration talk therapy afterwards. And that really helps people drop into the experience, have the best possible experience, and then figure out how it fits into your life afterwards. And that's what creates these long-lasting outcomes from ketamine therapy, where people who have never responded to other treatments, who have depression and PTSD, are symptom-free at 12 to 20 weeks out. And it does require work. There's no doubt about it, right? It's not like you don't have to do the work. You have to do the work. But there are ways to make that work a little bit easier to do. And ketamine therapy is a great approach to that.
Yes. And quick question with regard to your particular process. I just heard you are a big proponent, I hope I say it correctly, please correct me if I'm wrong, in a dyadic approach. So can you explain to us what that means, Dr. Dave?
Yes, that's a really good question because we don't talk about this that often. Most of the time when, and if anybody who's listening here has ever been to a therapist, it's usually one therapist. It's not two. And sometimes that works great and sometimes it doesn't. In psychedelic therapy, we always try to do a dyadic approach. And this approach was put together by MAPS, the Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Studies, for MDMA treatment, and then expanded into ketamine treatment and also expanding into psilocybin treatment, which is the process of having two therapists for every patient, and ideally one female therapist and one male therapist. And the reason for that is because we, all of us, even if we didn't know both our parents, we all had a father and mother at one time. And we all have certain feelings from childhood about our fathers and mothers from one time, even if they weren't around that much. And so those feelings shape the way we see ourselves in a huge way. And they shape things that we don't even realize they're shaping. And so when we, one of the most common examples is when we have a relationship with our fathers, as one example, if you have a relationship with your father and you're a man, and then you find yourself in your adult life acting out different things that your father did when he was alive and you knew him, but you actually didn't like your father because maybe your father was verbally abusive to you as a kid. And then you now start to hate yourself for being like him, right? And then what happens if you're in therapy and you start to notice things in common between your male therapist and your father? Then you start to have something comes up that's called transference or countertransference, which is I'm treating the therapist like they are my father because they remind me of that person so much. And then I start acting as if in the therapy session, this is my father. And I start processing and bringing up the conflict from the past. And if there's only one therapist present to respond to that, then those kinds of situations can quickly become very challenging because the therapeutic relationship is compromised, where there's all of a sudden the barriers that we had as therapist and patient are now therapist who sees himself as a therapist, but is being treated like the patient's father, and the patient sees the therapist as father, right? And so if you have another therapist there, ideally someone of the opposite sex, doesn't have to be, but ideally, then what ends up happening is that third person chimes in and starts to help process that in a more thoughtful way, where we're actually walking through the experience of role-playing that relationship. And then the trauma can actually get out. But if the therapist accidentally falls into the trap of feeling like the patient's father and getting put into that energy transfer situation, then things can get very muddy really quick, and it can compromise the entire patient-doctor relationship, and all the healing that comes from it can be compromised. So having a third person there, which is what we call dyadic therapy, helps to prevent any of that kind of stuff from happening. And we also see that people tend to have really great outcomes with two therapists, especially when psychedelic medicine is present. So that's a big part of why we promote and talk about dyadic therapy, two therapists, one patient, as being a gold standard for psychedelic therapy, because transference happens more under the influence of psychedelics. So we want to make sure to be mindful of that going in.
That makes a lot of sense, Dr. Dave. Thank you for explaining this. I'd like to circle back to ketamine. Could you expand on the neurobiological mechanisms that underpin ketamine's rapid antidepressant effects and how these differ from traditional antidepressants?
Yeah, ketamine's an interesting drug. It was discovered in the lab. It is what's called a dissociative anesthetic. It was discovered maybe about 70 years ago or just over 70 years ago. It is actually, I believe, a naturally occurring molecule in certain strains of mushrooms, but it is not naturally occurring at a level that's high enough to be medicinal. So you have to make it in the lab to get high enough doses to actually induce the effect that ketamine induces. But ketamine's mechanism of how it works for depression is not actually fully understood. And we know that it activates certain NMDA receptors and opioid receptors and a number of other receptors in the brain, but we don't exactly understand how the combination of that activation of those receptors results in the antidepressant effects or the psychedelic effects. So it's never really been fully understood. That being said, we don't know how lots of different drugs work. We didn't know how Tylenol worked until, I think it was like 5 years ago, or oral inhaled anesthetic agents that you get during surgery. We haven't known how those worked either, but we still use them for 100 years. We don't have all the answers yet, but we're learning a lot now from the recent studies about the different receptors that ketamine binds and why it might work better for some people or better for other people and how we get those antidepressant effects, but not fully understood to date.
And considering, as you mentioned before, ketamine is the only legal psychedelic that we have access to so far. Thank goodness we do. Hopefully see a change in the legal landscape concerning MDMA. But with regard to ketamine, how do you foresee ketamine-assisted therapy potentially evolving in the coming years, especially when we look at the acceptance among traditional healthcare providers, how that seems to be growing?
The ketamine therapy is evolving very quickly. There's probably 1,000 ketamine providers in the U.S. right now across all 50 states. Most of these folks are from the emergency medicine and anesthesia world. So they're not the people who are running those clinics. So they're people who don't do therapy. Mm-hmm. They're people who learn to use ketamine for emergency situations in the emergency room or in the operating room. And the way that ketamine is used in the emergency room and the operating room is as anesthetic, pain reliever, and reduction of conscious awareness. When we use ketamine in depression or in PTSD, we're using it to expand conscious awareness, right? We're not using it to sedate you. We're not using it to anesthetize you. We're using it to expand your awareness. So they're very different use cases of the same medicine at different doses with different protocols. The dose used in the operating room is 10 times the dose we use in the mental health clinic, for example. So I think what we're going to see with ketamine moving forward, and I hope we see, is that the results from studies are going to come out showing that even though we know ketamine has effectiveness when used by itself, because it does, which is interesting, it has antidepressant effects in something like 50% of people at 4 weeks out of treatment with just the medicine by itself. I think what we're going to see is that when you combine ketamine with talk therapy before and after, that we're going to see those numbers increase from 50% response rate to 70 to 80 to 90% response rates. And we're going to see the benefits of the therapy last longer rather than lasting 2 to 4 weeks after a dose. We're going to see those effects last for months or even years. And the therapy is really helpful and really critical to creating that sustained benefit. Because that's where you actually learn to take all the stuff from the ketamine experience and then bring it into your life as new practice, new habits, new ways of thinking and being. That's what creates the long-term change. That's how MDMA assisted therapy works. That's how psilocybin assisted therapy seems to be working. That's also how ayahuasca works in the traditional indigenous setting, right? So there are all these psychedelic therapies, whether in modern culture or ancient culture, are all working in a similar way, but we have to do the practices to get the long-term benefit. So I think the main thing we're going to see is that as ketamine expands, it's not just going to expand to through medicine-only administration, but it's going to expand to medicine plus therapy to get the best results. We're already seeing more therapists rapidly come into ketamine treatment programs and to provide that kind of treatment. So that's really great. And I think when we start to see MDMA legalized for practice in the end of 2024, which likely it will be cleared by the FDA in 2024, we're going to start to see it come out in practice. And a lot of people ask me, well, what would you choose? Would you, when MDMA is legal, would you just go straight to MDMA or would you start with ketamine still? And I think I always tell people that we'd always start with ketamine first in almost every case, because ketamine is the safest of all these medications. It's the easiest to access. It can be administered in many different ways, IV, injection, or sublingual, nasal, although nasal is the least preferred method. And then it also doesn't have as much risk with other medications you're taking. So you can still take your antidepressants or your other medications for mental health and start your ketamine therapy at the same time. Whereas with MDMA therapy and psilocybin therapy, you're supposed to taper off of a lot of your other mental health medications before you start. And that can be a very challenging process. So if we can use ketamine as the bridge to help people get from, I'm taking six drugs for my mental health and they're not working and I'm having side effects, to I'm taking one or two or zero drugs for my mental health because of ketamine therapy and I've started my process and I'm feeling better, but I'm not all the way there. Now I'm considering what the next step is. Maybe the next step is MDMA therapy, right? When most of their medications and the other issues that might come up with MDMA therapy are no longer at the forefront, then we can start to think about other tools. So I think ketamine is still going to be a mainstay. I think it's going to be more of a mainstay. And my hope is that we see it starting to be used earlier in the practice of treating mental illness. So maybe even before we start to use SSRI antidepressants or benzodiazepines or other sedative and hypnotic medication, maybe we can do a few doses of ketamine with some therapy and see how that goes before we put somebody on a medication for life. I think that is really the opportunity here that we are seeing come in the future of treating mental health conditions.
Yes. Excellent, Dr. Dave. Thank you for sharing this. I agree with you on all points. Brings to mind another esteemed guest on this podcast. She calls herself a holistic psychiatrist, Dr. Ellen Vora. And she said the issue with SSRIs and other drugs like that is, she said, she as psychiatrists, were taught how to put people on them. We're not taught how to get people off them. Of course not, because customer for life. And we are fully prepared to offer MDMA once the legal landscape changes, and integration is so crucial. We're so fortunate to work with a network of really incredible therapists. We're also trained in these types of therapies, and it makes a huge difference. It really helps to anchor the breakthroughs, what you learn. And I myself went through the types of sessions that we offer on my own. You mentioned it. Ketamine alone is an incredible medicine, even better with therapy. I'm a testament to even taking it alone. I went in with a very particular intention and it helped resolve childhood trauma. I felt, you hear from ayahuasca, people who have sat with a medicine, that it is a higher, much, much higher intelligence than our human intelligence, much more ancient, that works with you, through you. The ketamine for myself, I felt, it felt not another intelligence. It felt like my higher self. I connected to my higher self. I was able to observe my conscious and subconscious actually connecting. And I was able to bring the kinds of realizations I had, the healing that I had, into regular life. and some really fascinating things I did not go into these sessions with. I noticed 10 days later, for example, I used to have a huge phobia of flying insects that got completely resolved. Within 10 days, I was able to sit above a beehive we have here off the master bedroom deck and meditate. A nurse of ours, she actually shared an experience she had. She used to be extremely scared of bodies of water. Within 2 weeks of, we offer this to our nurses as well, and especially if they're dealing with mental health issues, of course, to go through this. She reported she found herself on a vacation with friends in Nevada. She was splashing around and having fun in a lake. So it's really interesting. Talking about MDMA, I am really interested in your perspective on how MDMA assisted therapies, mechanisms of promoting safety and relaxation compare. Can you elaborate on the effects of MDMA and also the vibrational therapy provided by Apollo Neuro, especially in with regard of how they regulate the amygdala's response?
Yeah, that's a great question. This is one of my favorite topics. The way that psychedelic medicines seem to work as a whole category of drugs, psyche means mind and delos means to show or to reveal. Taking a psychedelic medicine is to reveal parts of ourselves, of our minds, of our bodies, parts of ourselves we were not aware of to ourselves, right? So that can be accessed with drugs like psychedelic medicines, MDMA and ketamine, or it can be accessed with natural techniques like meditation, breath work, soothing touch, soothing music, yoga, right? People can act flow states. People can access these deeper states of consciousness in lots of different ways. Dreams are the most common way that we see people access psychedelic states for every human. We know that that MDMA and ketamine can induce these states as molecules. And one of the things that they do is they actually tune our radio and our brains to perceive frequency and vibration differently and to perceive ourselves differently. And everything in the universe is made up of vibration. Everything is objects in motion. Even your chair that doesn't seem like it's in motion has molecules in it that are moving. We just can't see them. But you take a psychedelic medicine in a therapeutic setting, and all of a sudden, the molecules like tuning our radio tuner to tune into different frequencies that we might not have been, that might have eluded us before. We might not even have realized they're there, but they're there. And some of them might be great and enjoyable and joyful, and other ones might be really hard and challenging, but those, it's tuning the radio. So when you think about that in the context of vibration, like from Apollo, what's happening is that we're changing the way our body perceives vibration, and then you're delivering a safety stimulation to the body that reminds us that we're safe. And MDMA has a way of tuning us into that safety response specifically. So if you combine a safe stimulation to the body, like Apollo, somebody holding your hand, giving you a hug, soothing music with MDMA, you amplify the effects of the MDMA, right? If you ketamine, similarly, activates a safe state, different mechanism, but it's activating that safe state of feeling in your body through quiet mind. So racing thoughts, fast heart rate, too much going on up here, all make us feel unsafe and out of control. What if this spiraling all the time just slows down and quiets and then eventually stops and you can just watch yourself be you without judging yourself, which is what we call in therapy, observer mind, which is what we all train as therapists to do, but we're notoriously bad at doing it for ourselves. And what if you could just train yourself to do that and to enter that observer mind states with ketamine's help? Then when you apply a vibration, a soothing stimulation, music, vibration, et cetera, or soothing touch to somebody, then that also amplifies their connection to their bodies and their connection to that safe place in their bodies that they can go to anytime they want with breathing or meditation or what have you. And so both of these tools, even though they are very different molecularly, ketamine and MDMA, they're both increasing our ability to tune in to what's going on in here and in here in our hearts, right? And when you tune that, just the environment is critical, by the way, to tune this. When you tune it just right, you can get people to a point where they recognize that what's in here is loving and beautiful and warm and comfortable and exciting to be around and joyful to be around. And then that makes this experience a place we want to be. It makes this experience a thing that we're proud of, that we're happy about, that we are excited about. And that's an experience that most human beings on this earth, particularly in the Western world, have never felt as adults. So you're tuning that receiver in our brains to tune into the safety that exists within us, within our own heart and within our own bodies. And that is the practice of meditation. That's what meditation and breathing techniques are trying for thousands of years to teach us how to do. But most of us weren't taught them. I wasn't taught them either growing up. So it took me many years to learn how to breathe properly, and I still mess it up most of the time. So the psychedelic medicines are really great for that. And the one thing that's different about MDMA in particular, in terms of the experience that people have, is that MDMA lasts 4 hours. And if you add in a second dose in the therapy session, it lasts 6 or more hours, whereas ketamine is 60 to 90 minutes. So the ketamine experience is very internal and meditative. You're really just like going inside yourself and watching yourself, whereas the looking at your, observing your own higher intelligence, like you said, and MDMA allows you to observe that within yourself, but also to observe that within others and connect with others and have a conversation and process a lot of the stuff that was stuck in here and get it out. And you can move and you can talk and you can do all the things that ketamine are hard under ketamine. Because ketamine's an anesthetic. MDMA is really interesting as a tool because it helps people feel safe enough to remake meaning around trauma in a very direct way, because it works by amplifying safety cascades in the emotional brain. And when you boost safety in the emotional brain, then the emotional brain directly connects to the amygdala and says, hey, buddy, I know you're firing off right now because you think we're under threat, but we're not. So why don't you calm down and stop firing off and let us just enjoy this moment? Mm-hmm. Right. And then all of a sudden your amygdala shuts down, or at least quiets. Our racing thoughts start to quiet. And then we start to enjoy the feeling of just being with ourselves. And that is one of the most beautiful, loving experiences that any human can access at any time, but requires a little bit of teaching. And the psychedelic therapy techniques help us to teach people how to do that more effectively. And Apollo helps to accelerate that. And we're actually studying that now in studies with ketamine therapy patients. We've had thousands of ketamine therapy patients using Apollo before, during, and after for this exact reason, and also using it after MDMA therapy in a trial with, in collaboration with MAPS right now, to sustain the treatment responses after MDMA. So just for the integration phase, if we add Apollo, can we keep people healed for longer? And that is some really exciting stuff that we can't wait to tell you more about when we have results back.
Oh, outstanding, Dr. Dave. And I would love to do a follow-up then. That's so exciting, because what you just talked about, this experiencing ourselves, experiencing the power and the beauty, the divinity that lies within us in this beautiful, let's call it heart, but I not merely mean the organ of the heart with us, the field, the energy, the intelligence of our hearts. And as you mentioned, most people in our Western world have never experienced that. Just talking about it makes me so emotional in a beautiful way. Everybody should have the opportunity to experience that. And even just experiencing that, knowing that is there, knowing that is our superpower, it changes, absolutely changes lives. And yeah, I want to thank you so much for everything you're doing, Dr. Dave. You are such an inspiration. You're doing such important work. And for those in our audience who'd like to learn more about you, maybe even connect with you, where can they find you? How can they do
so? Thank you so much for having me. First off, this is so much fun. It's my pleasure. And you can find me on socials. I'm always happy to hear from you at Dr. David Rabin on Instagram and Twitter. And you can also find me at apolloneuro.com, apolloneuro.com. which is also where the Apollo wearable lives and the Apollo technology. If you want to learn more, if you can't remember that, you can go to wearablehugs.com, which is what the kids call it. And you can also find me on Spotify and Apple Podcasts on my shows, where we deep dive into the news around the week, the biweekly news around psychedelic medicine and treatment and the discoveries coming out, which is called the Psychedelic Report. And then also our show on consciousness and healing, which around 21st century medicine practices, which is called Your Brain Explained.
Super. And I'll make sure to put all of that in the show notes. Dr. Dave, what a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ariana.
Hey, everyone. If you're as passionate about transforming your life and reaching your peak performance as I am, I invite you to join my newsletter. Think of it as your weekly dose of inspiration and knowledge to supercharge your journey to becoming superhuman. Start optimizing mentally, physically, and spiritually today. Just head over to superhumanize.com/newsletter and sign up. Trust me, your future self will thank you.